So this is just a quick notice to everyone. We are recording this session and we will be making it publicly available, the audio file, within usually 3 to 4 business days following the session. So if you have any concerns or questions about that collection of information, feel free to contact our FOIP director at the information below here. And again, this presentation is available on the website. So if you need to take a look there as well. And next. So I'm sure you're all very familiar, but there's a couple ways for you guys to ask questions and interact in this session. So you can either raise your hand and I'll unmute you and then you'll unmute on your end. Or you can type your Q&A, your question into the Q&A box, and then I'll read it out for our panelists to respond to. So you're also able to upvote questions that you're interested in or that you'd like to see a response to. So that functionality is there for you as well. And then if you're calling in, I saw a couple of people on the conference line. You can raise your hand with a *9 and you can unmute your microphone with a *6 and you'll be able to participate as well. So I think that clears everything up from the housekeeping side. So I'll send it over to Dennis.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us this morning. Obviously, this session is all tied to our commitment on stakeholder engagement and the principles that we stand for in that space. We are trying to be as inclusive as we can be on things that we're progressing within the ISO. And so this discussion is around transmission utilization and transmission capability mapping. We will be transparent, obviously, in our discussions and are looking for your feedback as we go through this session. And so our engagement principles are there in front of you, and we look forward to the discussion with all of you here this morning. I'll just kick off the session. We've got myself here. I'm the VP of Grid Reliability at the ISO. I'll be leading the discussion on the transmission utilization piece. And then Marie-France Samaroden is here. She's our Director of Engineering, Project Management and Technology, and she'll be leading the discussion on the capability mapping with her two friends, Lei Zhong and John Wainick, who are the ones that have done all the work in this space. And we're excited to share some pretty unique work that we've done in the space in transmission capability mapping and looking for your feedback on where we're heading in that space. So those are the members that'll be in discussion with you here this morning. Next slide there, John. I don't think I need to go through this. That's kind of the gist of it. We'll do the transmission utilization, have a Q&A, and then we'll move into the capability mapping and have a Q&A session there. By all means, we're looking for your questions and thoughts and feedback on the session. So as Jennifer indicated, you can either raise your hand or put your questions in the Q&A line, and we'll do our best to answer all of them before we end the session. I think we kind of covered this. We'll go through transmission utilization. I think it's important to have a conversation in this space. There's been ongoing discussions in industry around transmission utilization and messaging that we're overbuilt and underutilized from a transmission perspective in this province. I think it's important to at least have a conversation and get aligned on what we're talking about when we talk about transmission utilization. And we've identified some potential metrics that we think are useful to guide that conversation going forward. So we'll go through those metrics. And we are looking for your feedback on whether you feel those metrics are effective in communicating utilization on an ongoing basis, or if there's other metrics that you think would be useful in that space. And then we'll go through the transmission capability methodology that we've developed and the mapping approach that we have also developed. And the team will take you through the methodology, the assumptions, do a preview of the map, how we think the information should be utilized, and then kind of walk you through the timing of when we're going to release actual results from that methodology in the new year. So from a transmission utilization perspective, you can just flip to the next slide there, John. Obviously, there's a distinction from an ISO perspective between planning the power system and making sure that it's reliable, which means it needs to be designed to deal with planned and unplanned outages. And, you know, anybody who's familiar with power systems will understand that power flows instantly in the speed of light from supply to load. And so electricity finds the easiest path from supply to load. And that's all dictated by the physics of transmission lines, and lower impedance paths drives higher power flows. And power flows on a power on a network are not easily controllable, not like it is on gas networks where you have valves. There aren't really any valves on a power system. And so power flows instantaneously on paths depending on impedance and how much energy needs to flow from supply to demand instantaneously. It's not easily stored. And so currently it's not easily stored. And therefore, power must equal supply, must equal demand instantaneously every second of every day. And so obviously a power system and its network changes all the time, and power flows are always changing because there's outages all the time on the system, be it planned or unplanned. And so you need to plan a power system to be able to handle the power flows that occur when those network changes result, and they need to handle those power flow changes instantly. So that's the challenge when you're planning a power system. Next slide. We'll start to try to create a distinction in the conversation on utilization between planned utilization, which always has got to be below 100% under normal conditions, because when you have outages, the other lines need to be able to accommodate that increased power flow so you don't overload those other lines and cause cascading outages across the network. And so transmission networks are always built for redundancy in order to provide stable and reliable electricity during both planned and unplanned outages. And for those who may not be aware, planned outages occur on the system all the time for maintenance and for interconnecting new facilities. And so you always have outages on your transmission system from a planned perspective. It would be rare during the year to have, you know, a consecutive week where we have no planned outages on the network. And then unplanned outages occur throughout the year. Obviously, transmission assets are exposed to weather continuously. And so there are, whether it's failures or weather-related outages occurring on the system throughout the year. And you can't predict when those outages can occur. And if they occur at the worst time under high system stress, the network needs to be able to handle that and not have cascading outages to customers. And obviously as well, you know, customer demands change continuously through the day, month, and year. And so supply is always trying to match that change in demand, and power flows on the network are always shifting to ensure supply is meeting demand across the network. And so you've got all of those variables that are occurring hour to hour, day to day on the network, and you plan the transmission system to have enough capacity to be able to deal with all of those situations reliably. Next slide, John. Just an example here to kind of make it obvious. On the left side, example A, this is just an example of, you got network one and network two with three identical transmission lines, identical impedances. And if you have 95% of the line rating power flow between network one and network two on all three of those lines, that's a fairly heavily loaded line or a network. And as soon as you have one contingency on one of those three lines, you will then, the power will instantaneously increase to 140% of line ratings, and lines cannot operate above 100% for very long at all. And you will start to have those lines trip, and you have cascading outages. And that's when you run into serious issues on a network from a reliability perspective. And so you plan a power system to be able to handle the loss of one contingency, just one contingency on the network, an N minus one type contingency event. That's how you plan the power system. And so if you look at example B, if you've got 65% power flow, that can be accommodated if you lose one of the lines, because the other lines can accommodate the extra 30 some percent and not result in cascading outages. And so from a planned utilization perspective, depending on the network, depending on how many paths, depending on the impedance of those lines between the networks, you need to have utilization that's down well below 100% in order to be able to handle those contingencies reliably on the system. And so when people are talking about utilization under system normal, that we're underutilized, we're not understanding, I think, in those conversations that, of course, under normal states, utilization is going to be lower because we actually plan it that way in order to be able to reliably deal with contingencies on the network and not have cascading outages. Next slide. So we have been considering what we would feel are reasonably good utilization metrics that we would want to start to calculate and provide out to industry in the future so that we can be transparent and be on the same page when we're talking about utilization of the network here in the province. And so we're sharing these with you as initial thoughts of potential metrics, and I am interested in any feedback from those in the industry here in Alberta around these utilization metrics or others you feel may be effective metrics to use to communicate transparently what the network in the province is looking like from a utilization perspective. So to start with, obviously line ratings is the maximum design physical power flow that a line can accommodate based on its design. That's an important metric. The planned utilization metric is, for us, the maximum power flow that can be accommodated and still absorb the N minus one or single contingency in the area and not overload under that situation. And therefore, we would look at what we would describe as the N minus one power flow divided by the line rating is the planned utilization percentage that we would expect the system to be planned to and that line or network in the region to be planned to in order to absorb contingencies in the area. That for us is the key utilization metric. The next metric is obviously what the power flows actually have been in a year or the annual actual utilization of a particular line. And there we're looking at two types of metrics, the maximum power flow that occurred in the year as a percentage of a line rating to give you a percent max utilization. And then another metric would be the average power flow in the year over the line rating to give you an average utilization during the year. Now, actual power flows in the year should not exceed the percent planned utilization. And because if it does, then you're exposing the system to cascading outages if you have that contingency occur at that maximum power flow, because the lines that remain cannot handle the increased power flow on them. It would exceed the planned utilization. And so we would look at, from an actual power flow perspective, does the percent max utilization on that line in that year exceed the planned utilization? And if it does, then we're starting to really push the limits of utilization on the network for that transmission line. And so that's what we're looking at from a metrics perspective, essentially to come up with what the percentage planned utilization is for each line, and then provide annually the maximum power flow and average power flow information and see where we're at from a perspective between those metrics to help get a picture of utilization on the network based on what a power system is actually planned to accommodate. So I think you know, I went really quickly through that. Is there, I don't know, is there another slide there, John?
Yes, there is.
Okay. Oh, yeah, right. Good. I forgot. I put some hypothetical examples in here. And so this just gives you an indication of how those metrics would be useful from a transparent perspective to be provided out to industry. The left slide, where you've got green is the line rating of a particular line. N minus one line is, this is the planned utilization level that that line should be operated to, because if you have a contingency in the area, you need that much room before you, so you can absorb the contingencies, so you don't overload that particular line and exceed the line rating. And then the dots are the maximum ratings or maximum actual power flows during the year to show where those lines are operating actually, and how close they are operating to that N minus one planned utilization level. And then the average line gives you an indication of over the entire year, kind of what's the average flow on the line. And that would be expected to be, you know, substantially below the line rating and substantially below the percent planned utilization or N minus one rating. The right-hand side shows you an example where same, you've got the line rating, and now you've got maximum flows, actual maximum flows on the lines during the years that are way up and close to the line rating and actually exceeding that N minus one planned utilization level. So there's good chances that if you have a contingency, you're not going to be able to absorb it on the line and you're going to have overloading. And so that should be telling us we're pushing that area of the system quite high and probably too far. And we'll need to look at what we can do to bring the power flows down in that region to accommodate that planned utilization level. And you can see the average power flows there through the year as well. And so that's kind of a way to show transparently the utilization within the system on a particular line and how close and how hard we're pushing that line from an asset perspective and risk perspective. So next slide, John. So we are seeking feedback on those potential utilization metrics that we've just shared with you today. The next steps for us, because we will be moving ahead in 2022 to progress the transmission utilization metrics, we will be working to collect and present the actual annual power flow data on the network. And that'll take some time to be able to figure out how to extract that information from our systems and be able to present that volume of information in a simple and clear way. We then also have to do work on determining what the maximum flow in the year was, and did that occur as a result of contingencies in the area or not, so that we can be clear on the maximum flow in the year and whether that is due to contingency or not. And then the third thing we'll be doing is working through a methodology to be able to determine what that percent planned utilization level is for each 240 kV networked line and above, so 500 kV as well, based on N minus one contingency. So that'll take some work because we'll have to do modeling and a bunch of analysis to determine N minus one planned utilization levels and be able to then determine how best to share that information out to industry here in either, I'll say late 2022 or into 2023. But through 2022, we'll be looking for feedback as we progress this. And if any of you that are here on this webinar have any thoughts or views on the utilization metrics, please send them in to us through the stakeholder contact information, and we'll share what that looks like here at the end of this session. And now I think I'm just going to go to questions.
Sure. Sure, we've got a couple of dentists in the Q&A here. But okay. If there's anyone that wants to raise a hand, we can also do that. So the first one here, the ISO used to publish a 24-month reliability outlook that provided a snapshot of the grid's reliability. Example, TX constraint events on cut planes, abnormal operation, and TX path / area limit reductions, etc., and its ability to meet the electricity requirements for the next 2 years. Why did the ISO stop publishing this, and where can this info be found now?
Thanks, Santi. I'm not familiar with this 24-month reliability outlook since I've been in the role. So let me follow up on that. I don't know why we would have stopped providing that, but let me follow up on that, and I'll get back to you, Santi, specifically on that question.
Good. We have a question from Aaron Crush. Will the N-1 limits take into account RASs and MSSE?
Well, so Aaron, just to answer that, so the N-1 will take into account a single contingency on transmission lines in the area to determine, you know, if you lose one line, how much power flow is going to move to the other lines that remain in the region, and will those be overloaded? So it's not an MSSE issue. MSSC is related to the most severe single contingency, and that typically is the largest generator within the province, or under rare situations, if we have a bunch of generation connected to one transmission line, that if we lose that line, we might exceed that MSSC limit. So we'll deal with that through the MSSC conversation. There was MSSC, and what was the other? Let me just go back.
RASs.
RASs, thanks. RASs, again, aren't part of that N-1 determination. As we're talking about utilization of transmission assets, obviously we use RASs to manage that reliability risk, and we're prepared to use RASs for generation-driven overloads. We would not be keen on using RASs for firm load, because that would go against our reliability criteria. And so the N-1 limits are specifically related to losing a transmission line and seeing if we have enough capacity on the other lines to be able to accommodate those power flows in that situation, and determining how much room we need to have in order to accommodate those power flow transfers. And so that's the planned utilization level that we will be working through to calculate and share with industry, and then comparing what the actual power flows are to that limit. So hopefully that's clear. RASs and MSSC won't factor into that.
Thank you. Next one from Curtis Glazier. How would the use of dynamic line ratings change these potential utilization metrics?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think from a dynamic line rating perspective, we will be looking at dynamic line ratings and methodologies around the application of dynamic line ratings in 2022. That's one of our initiatives that Marie France will be leading. And so there's a ways to go there to determine how and most effectively we can actually apply dynamic line ratings in the province. Once we get there, then the line ratings that you saw with the straight line would become a dynamic line. Based on dynamic line ratings. And so that would become much more complicated in this type of utilization metric. I'd say that's out there in the future. I'm not going to worry too much about that right now. I'd actually like to just get the static potential utilization metrics in place and get us collectively familiar with what we're seeing on the system in that domain. And then as we get more sophisticated on the dynamic line ratings, we can factor that into our process that we've established for the static utilization metrics.
Excellent. Next question from Douglas Andrews. Does the current substation capacity availability provide for N-1?
We'll hold that question for the capability mapping part of the conversation. And I'm sure the team will answer that in that session.
So Louise Pando, how does the metric determine the cause of the overflow? Is it fair to say that currently generation and not load is driving transmission utilization and creating congestion?
I would say, Louise, that's not fair at all. As I indicated at the beginning, supply must equal demand instantaneously all the time. And so supply flows to demand. And both supply and demand determine the power flows on a system, not one or the other. And so it's not just a generation related issue at all. It's a network transfers power from supply to demand instantaneously. And that's what drives the power flows on the lines and drives the utilization of a network. And so no, it's not related to generation. It's related to generation load and power flows. The cause of the overflow, we're indifferent actually to the cause. What we will do is we'll look at N-1 contingencies. And so we don't care what causes the outage. We know we're going to have outages to the network. And what we're doing is if we have that outage, we want to ensure we have enough capacity on the rest of the network to be able to handle the increased instantaneous power flows that occur without cascading. That's the fundamental part of a reliable transmission network. And what we're trying to communicate here is that's the utilization level that is the most relevant, not the 100% line rating level and looking at what actual power flows are compared to that line rating level. Because obviously that utilization is going to be well below 100%. It's planned to be. It has to be. And so we're trying to communicate the planned level is down here because we want a reliable network. And so utilization should be compared to that metric. That's the more relevant metric, not the full line rating. Obviously, utilization is going to be low because we're actually planning it that way in order to ensure a reliable network.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. From Leonard Olean, will your consultation include the generation assumptions and set of outage assumptions used to perform the N-1 assessment? Is that something you can share now or later?
You know, good question, Leonard. Again, I think what we'll do is we're going to work through. We don't have the methodology established yet. You know, we've done a lot of different technical assessments and created some new methodologies here within the ISO around congestion analysis. You'll also hear today around capability mapping. And so there's synergies with those methodologies to apply to this work. Once we work through in 2022 those methodologies, we'll share the methodologies. I doubt we'll get into, you know, the hourly assumptions of generation dispatch and load dispatch to come up with these planned utilization numbers. But we'll share generally the methodology and how we've come up with it. It's not intended to be an exact perfect science. It's intended to provide directional understanding of here's the level of planned utilization we need on the network, and here's generally where we're at on this particular transmission line, so we can have a conversation focused on that utilization risk in an intelligent and aligned way. So hopefully that helps answer your question. This is mostly focused on generally understanding what the utilization is of our network across the province and get aligned on that as an industry. It's not to deal with congestion. It's not to deal with MSSE. We obviously focus on congestion risk through congestion analysis, which we're prepared to share those results as we go forward on different projects.
So it looks like Leonard has his hand raised, so I'm just going to unmute you, Leonard, and you can follow up with any questions here.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Dennis. Your answer was very helpful. Yeah, I guess as a quick follow-up, you know, from my perspective and some of our industry perspective, it would just to get some clarity about how things like variable renewable generation are treated and the assumptions that are made there. Things like, well, it's going to be really windy, but also solar is at 100% at the same time, even though it's the middle of the night, that kind of thing. I'm just making sure we have consistent and reliable assumptions for variable renewables and, of course, energy storage. And I appreciate that you're in the middle of developing that, and look forward to having more chats with you later as you get farther down the line. So,
okay, that's helpful, Leonard. Yeah, we would obviously utilize similar methodologies that we're using for congestion assessments. And there we utilize merit order dispatch. We utilize wind profiles based on actual historical wind profile output. And we use solar profiles based on actual historical solar profiles. So we would be bringing as much realism to the analysis that we can, recognizing you're always trying to forecast and predict the future. So so that's helpful. I understand the context of your question.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And then we'll just do one more. We've got a hand raised here, Surrenda. I'm just going to unmute you on my side, if you can unmute as well.
Okay, good. And can you hear me anywhere?
Yes.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yep.
Okay, very good. Thanks. And thanks. Good morning, Dennis and Jennifer.
Good morning.
Dennis, could you go back to your slide where you have those 2% utilization and maximum utilization slide? Go back to the formula one. Yeah, here we go. Yeah. One further up. Yeah, here. No. Continue. This one. Okay, perfect. Yeah, I think that's good to start to Dennis, but my worry is that having this 2 number to represent what happening on a yearly basis might not be enough to tell the full story, the average flow or maximum flow. I think what, and you might cover this further down the presentation, but I have other commitments, so I won't be able to stay. So I thought I'd just put my 2 cents right now. So these 2 numbers are good to start with, but my worry is that they won't be enough to tell the full story. So I think normally what will be enough to do a kind of a distribution usage curve that will tell us how often do we hit the maximum. It is once like a 10-year event or 100-year event. So you don't want to plan it happen in a year, but that event is 100-year event. So that won't be the one telling this story. But if you do this distribution curve, that will tell you how heavily the line is used and whether it needs some more work. So I think that'll be my two cents.
Yeah, Surrenda, I understand, you know, we could provide, I'll call it, each 10 percentile of the actual power flows and chop it up that way. We could provide the full distribution curve. I'm just suggesting that we start with the basic of max and average, because that will give you a pretty good indication of the risk you're being exposed to on power flows to the planned utilization level. As we get a little more sophisticated in the space, I'm sure we'll expand that beyond max and average and potentially provide the full distribution curves. We're just going to start here first, I think. And if it's easy and we can, you know, provide the full distribution curves, then I'm not opposed to doing that. I just want the industry to align and understand that utilization is not based on steady state situations in the power system, right? Because you actually have to plan for the contingencies. And so I get concerned when communications are occurring that we're, you know, heavily underutilized in the province. And I don't think we're actually understanding that. No, we're probably not, because we actually have to plan for contingencies. And those are two fundamentally different things. And so that's what I'm hoping to accomplish here as we go forward with this work.
Yeah, no, I think if I may add, no, I think that is a good starting point, Dennis. I think the worry is on consumer side is that this one-time event become the deciding factor.
Oh,
so that's yeah, what the worry is.
So let me be clear. This has very little to do with our decision making on whether we're going to move ahead with infrastructure. We go through a pretty rigorous need assessment process for that. The intent of this is to help address the ongoing concern around underutilization of the network in this province. And so we think it's helpful to start to provide some basic information and basic understanding to industry to help that conversation. But let me be clear, this isn't the driver at all for infrastructure. This is more being transparent about kind of current state of utilization on the network.
Okay. Makes sense. Thanks, Dennis.
You would expect that, you know, if there's some pockets that we start to see the utilization levels being, you know, exceeding that planned utilization, then you would expect that there's probably some infrastructure coming sometime in the future to deal with that because the risk is going up in that particular area. It's an early indicator, if you will.
Okay. Thanks, Dennis.
So we actually have a couple more questions if you're still good, Dennis, or do you want to?
Yeah, let's go through them quick. Let's go through them quick.
So Evan Barry, with 26,000 kilometers of TX lines under operation, does the ISO plan to provide this data just for certain lines? And with the lines that experience utilization exceeding the N-1 planned utilization, would it be worth creating a daily graph to try and understand whether that max is an anomaly?
Thanks, Evan. Glad you could join us. So our intention will be to focus first on the 240 and 500 kV networked lines because radial lines, it's not relevant here from a utilization perspective because if you have a contingency, it's out. So it's the network lines that we'll focus on. You know, assuming the methodology is fairly robust and efficient, we can then bring in the 138 kV network lines. Whether we can get to that next year or not, I don't know. I can't commit to that, but we'll focus on the 240 and the 500 because that's the core of the network. And as far as daily graphs, good Lord, no, I'm not going to go to daily graphs to start with. I think what we will be trying to do is provide annual information, Evan. And when we have that max level on a particular line, what we will want to do is determine if that max output was because of a contingency in the area or if it was because there were no contingencies and we're starting to push up the power flows in that region, even without contingencies. So we'll work through how to do that and provide that information. And that I think will be a good starting point. Again, I'm a firm believer of progressively improving as we go along. So we'll start there and see if what we learn from that and what the industry thinks would be valuable going forward. And then we can always drive improvement the following year and the year after that.
Sounds good. Thank you. Laura Lay, what base case and dispatch assumptions would be used for the N-1 power flow calculation? And would that be published with the results?
Yeah, I think I answered that already. We'll explain the methodology, but we're not going to be providing, you know, just for clarity, there's probably 300 transmission lines. We're not going to be providing 300 base case output details. That's not the purpose of this information. This is to provide industry a good understanding of generally where utilization is at on the system. That's the initial intent of this. I sure hope we don't get into the detailed base case arguments for this type of work. Hopefully we can understand the methodology and take input on the methodology. And if we need to improve the methodology going forward, we'd be up for doing that.
Next one here, Aaron Krush. How will these capacity assessments affect customer connections? Will the ISO limit SDS based on these N minus one limits, or will N minus zero still be the metric used to accommodate generation projects?
Yeah, Aaron, for clarity again, this has nothing to do with customer connections. This is general utilization information that we think it's valuable to start sharing with industry and get on the same page. Customer connections will go through the exact same process. And that is, we use N minus zero for congestion analysis, and we'll look at RAS for N minus one limits to try to accommodate integrating as much generation in a particular region that, as we can. And if we're bumping up against those limits, that's when we'll look at infrastructure in the area to help deal with the integration of generation there.
Matt Davis, in providing the max and average, will the ISO identify when in the year the max occurred? This would be useful in understanding the conditions that led to the max utilization.
We'll take a note of that, Matt. Not opposed to that if it's easy to extract and is helpful for industry to know which day of the year and hour that max or maxes occurred. There might be multiple hours during the year that you're up in that max range. And again, it's not, you know, the max is might be 1 hour, it might be a collection of several hours in the year. And we're just trying to understand, you know, what level of power flow is up in that upper max limit, and share that information with industry, not necessarily the 1 hour.
Excellent. Sudarshan asking, just checking whether any line-wise forced outage data is available.
Sudarshan, I'm not sure what you're referring to there. You know, TFOs, transmission facility owners do track forced outages to their assets and report that to CEA. And so there is, you know, average forced outage data that's available to CEA members. And if that's what you're referring to, then that's where that information is. If you're thinking about something different, let me know. And we can answer your more detailed questions there.
Sounds good. And Ben is asking, are the utilization metrics only related to the thermal line ratings, or would it include considerations on other system constraints like stability limits?
Yeah, Ben, you know, we're going to start just with the thermal line rating. Typically that is the, you know, the best starting point. The stability limits would be pretty unique in certain regions. And so we'll just start with the thermal line rating, start providing that information out. Obviously, if we know that the thermal line ratings can't be accommodated for stability, then we would expect those ratings to be lowered. But we'll start with thermal line ratings.
Great. Thanks, Dennis.
That in itself will be complicated enough to start with. So hopefully, thanks for all your questions. Hopefully you understand that we're starting here to both figure out a methodology to provide utilization information and kind of land on some consistent metrics and get that out to industry for transparency in 2022, 2023. Hopefully we can get that done in 2022. And then we're all up for continuous improvement on that as we go forward. That's really the intent.
Okay, that's it for Q&A and no hands raised, so we're good to move on.
Great. Thanks for the engagement, everyone. And now I'm going to pass it to Marie France to take us through the transmission capability mapping, which is probably the exciting part that you came here for today. So over to you, Marie France.
Thanks, Dennis. Yes, so I think you guys, I'm very excited about this next topic. So this is the, so we want to share with you guys a bit of a preview of what's to come. So we're going to talk today about the transmission capability map. And so can we go just to the next slide? So really what we're trying to do here is to make sure that we provide, we're going to have a map, and it's going to be showing folks where there is capability in the system. So the idea here is that we'll be publishing the map, and our first publishing will happen next year. And we're going to be able to have, it'll be, as we go through and you guys are going to see, we're going to talk about the assumptions, the methodology, and the actual results, and what it is that you're going to see. But the idea here being that you would be able to, customers that want to connect would be able to come here as kind of a first stop to see where there would be capability in the system. And so it's going to provide some general information to support the folks as they're making their decisions as to where to connect. Obviously, it's not guaranteed. And we would also just want to make sure that folks understand that the connection process is still the official process to facilitate system access services on our system. However, we do feel that this tool will be a great way for people to have some visuals and some information to help them in their decision making. So our goal here is to really help be more transparent and provide good data in a timely fashion so that folks can see it. And so that's at a high level what we're looking to do with this work. And so kudos to the team that have been working quite hard and diligently on this. And so we're excited today to, John and Leigh are going to walk you through the assumptions, the methodology, and give you a bit of a sneak peek into what the future is going to hold. So over to you, John.
Thank you very much, Franz. Yeah, so for the next couple slides, I'll walk through the assumptions and the methodology used to create this capability map, and then I'll provide a preview of the capability map. So the nature of the power system is changing. It's becoming more variable. We're seeing more variable energy sources like wind and solar. We're seeing changing load patterns, and this ultimately results in more variable transmission line flows. And this can make it difficult to predict the key hours that impact transmission capability. For this reason, we're assessing each hour in the previous year to understand the impact of resource availability and weather, and how they correlate to transmission line flows, and ultimately how they correlate to capability. So this will let us understand the current capability. We're doing a historical analysis to understand the existing system capability. I'm going to break down this methodology and assumptions into three sections. First, let's talk about the assumptions that go into creating this capability map. It's a historical assessment. So we're going to use historical data to model the system in each hour of the previous year to get an understanding of what is the existing system capability. We're going to be doing this for each substation, so keep that in mind. We're using historical merit order data. So if you're not familiar with merit order data, it's price quantity bids that are submitted to the ISO. So a generator asset would say, I would be willing to produce 50 megawatts for $30. Each generator submits a series of bids, and that becomes the merit order. So we have hourly merit order data. So we'll use that information as an input into this assessment. We will also use historical generation volumes from, say, wind and solar. So we're using how much wind and solar production was provided from each wind farm or solar farm for each hour in the previous year. We combine that with substation load. So we are looking at how much was each substation's demand in each hour, and we'll use historical load information as an input also into this assessment for the existing system capability. And the last piece is interchange data. So we'll be taking both the scheduled and the ATC limits on our interties, and using this is another input into the capability assessments. So that's kind of from a generation load perspective, what information needs to be brought into this assessment? What is the assumption, the historical information? We also have a transmission system assumption. So we'll be modeling the transmission system as of end of year. So if it's, say, the 2022 capability map, we'll be using the transmission system as of December 31st, 2021. And we'll be looking at all elements in service. Another way of saying that is N minus zero or category A. We'll be looking at how much could you add to the system or to a substation, considering the system normal state, no contingencies and thermal violations on those lines. I'll get to that. We're not contemplating the impact of outages, its capability with system normal. We'll be using the provided line ratings from the TFOs, the transmission facility owners. So they provide us line ratings. We'll use that in order to determine what are the constraints or the limits on the system. And we are not including projects or upgrades. It's an existing system capability. We're essentially benchmarking what is the existing system capability. So we take all of this information. Once we have all these data inputs and assumptions, we complete a series of calculations in order to understand what is the capability at a substation. So let's break down what those calculations are. First off, we're using a DC power flow analysis. If you're unfamiliar with the DC power flow analysis, it's a little bit different than the AC, the conventional AC analysis. We make a couple assumptions that allow us to simplify the calculations so we can process large amounts of data, large amounts of hours and calculations. The DC power flow analysis means that we're considering N minus zero thermal criteria. So we're looking at the thermal limits of transmission lines and system transformers to understand how much you could add at a substation from an N minus zero perspective. We considered the DC thermal analysis sufficient for two reasons. First, thermal constraints are the most common constraint observed for connection projects. And second, these results are indicative. The detailed connection studies will assess the less prevalent constraints, such as voltage stability or transient stability constraints. Like Mary France said at the beginning, the capability numbers aren't guaranteed. It's indicative to understand where in the system would be a good location when you're trying to decide where you should locate your project. So we're looking from an N minus thermal perspective, one of the most common constraints we see, to give that indication. So that's the DC power flow analysis. So in order to do this calculation, we do an hourly analysis of the previous year or of each hour in the previous year. So we take the historical load that we're seeing and we allocate it to the respective substations in that hour, so that we get a profile of the demand for that hour. Then we use the historical merit order data to complete a market simulation and to create an economic generation dispatch. So essentially, as we're recreating what would be the dispatch in that hour for the generation to meet the demand that was in that hour. We do this for every hour in the previous year, and now we have essentially a representation of how the system fluctuated through the year, how the demand fluctuated, how the generation fluctuated, and how the transmission line flows fluctuated, or how the variables impacted those transmission line flows. So once we have this hourly representation of the transmission system through the previous year, we use optimization techniques to calculate the capability at a substation. And we do this for each substation in the South and Central East region. And so that optimization technique uses an objective function and some constraints. The objective function is to maximize the incremental generation. So maximize how much generation can you add at this specific substation, subject to some constraints. Those constraints are the power flow equations, so that we make sure we're respecting the physics of the transmission system, as well as the line ratings, so that we're not introducing thermal violations or N minus zero thermal violations on any lines in the transmission system. So we'll do this calculation for each substation for each hour. And now, once we've done that calculation, we'll have an understanding of how the capability varies through the year, depending on the transmission system and the other variables around that substation. So what are the other generators doing? What are the nearby loads doing? What does the transmission system look like? And so we get this variable capability. The final step is to convert that variable capability into a final capability number that we communicate on the capability map. So we need to select from the low end of that capability in order to ensure the system remains reliable in all hours. So what we do is select the 0.5 percentile as the capability, meaning congestion does not occur in 99.5% of the hours. This method was selected to ensure we have a robust result. By filtering out extreme conditions and convergence concerns, if you're familiar with the regional capability map, you may notice a couple key differences between this map and our regional capability map. This map serves as a supplementary data on a more granular level. So we're looking at substation capability versus regional capability in the other map. We're using hourly simulations versus deterministic methods in our regional capability map. And we're looking at N minus zero thermal capability considering congestion versus AC analysis, including contingencies in the other regional capability map. So that covers the methodology and assumptions as far as what are the process, what's the calculations we do, how we cover it for each hour, for each substation, and in order to understand how the capability varies through the year. There's a couple additional pieces of information that we need to share with you. First off is the equipment monitoring. So we're monitoring transmission equipment, so transmission lines and transformers greater than or equal to 69 kV. So we're looking at the transmission system and making sure as you add generation at a substation, we're not introducing N minus zero thermal violations on any transmission equipment. We're monitoring the equipment province-wide to ensure that potential constraints outside the study region that limit capability are captured. So for example, if you're adding generation in say, let's say the southwest area, and it would cause a constraint in Calgary that would limit the amount you could add in the southwest, we're capturing that. So this provides a holistic assessment of the transmission, considering load, generation, and thermal constraints province-wide. So we're doing a holistic assessment province-wide of all these variables to understand, as you add generation, how much could you add at the substation before introducing N minus zero thermal violations. To reiterate, the capability is considering N minus zero thermal violations. The voltage and transient performance are considered in the connection studies. With the methodology, we can't assess them in these capability assessments. So it would be assessed as part of the connection process to ensure that those less frequent violations constraints are captured. Although we take a holistic system-wide approach to the study, the capability map provides capability for transmission level buses within the south and central east planning regions. In other words, the optimizations are holistic, but calculated only for the south and the central east regions. The DFOs have hosting capacity maps for DER connections. We are in active conversation with the DFOs to coordinate the studies and the results. We will share how we're coordinating the results in a subsequent stakeholder session. Now I would like to switch over, pause for a second, and provide a preview of our capability map. Okay, before I get started, I'd first like to tell you the numbers that you're seeing here are not finalized and they're subject to change before we release this map. Our plan is to release this map Q1 2022 after we complete some more validation and some update work to it. When you land on the map here, you have this disclaimer page, and I'll point out a couple items here. We have some links here showing up on the disclaimer where you can see some additional documentation that supports this map, as well as download the capabilities in a tabular form if you prefer to see them that way. This disclaimer can be accessed through our information button or about button up in the corner. So if you want to still access those links, you have access after you accept the disclaimer. So there's a couple things I'd like to show you on this capability map. So first off, what you'll notice is it's available for the South and the Central East regions, where we have a lot of wind and solar or variable generation projects, and it's hard to predict what the capability of a substation would be. The next piece is there's some filters on the side here where you can say turn off the transmission system, turn it back on if you don't want to see the transmission lines, as well as the planning areas and the substations. Although if you're looking for substation capability, it would make sense to leave those on. So the next piece is you'll notice there's a bubble around each of the substations. And the size of that bubble indicates the capability, the N-0 thermal capability of that substation, given our existing system historical assessment that we talked about in the methodology. So if you say zoom in on an area of the map, you'll see we have our substation shown here in their little circle showing their capability. If you click on a substation, you will get some information about that specific substation. In this case, you're seeing the ISO bus number and voltage of that substation, as well as the N-0 capability, so 150 megawatts. What we're saying here is based on last year's, the historical assessment or the existing system, we would expect you could add 150 megawatts without introducing N-0 thermal violations. This information is provided for each of our substations in the South and Central East regions. You'll notice as well that if you go to some substations like, say, North Lethbridge, you'll see two numbers, one for your 240 kV bus and one for your 138 kV bus. The capability is dependent on the transmission system, the impedances, the line ratings, etc. So depending on which voltage class you connect to, the capability can change depending on what are the limiting constraints or the limiting lines or transformers on the system. So you'll see we provide both numbers so that you can get an indication that, well, perhaps if I want to get 400 megawatts connected at North Lethbridge, I'll have to connect a 240 kV connection. Versus if you want to connect, say, only 250, you could potentially connect that on the 138 kV system. I'll show a couple more substations so that you get an idea. If we look at Tabor, 123 megawatts. One of the interesting ones is if we go to Bowmanton here, we actually have three numbers because of the configuration of Bowmanton. There's two critical 138 kV buses that could potentially have a difference depending on how you treat the bus tiebreaker in that area. If we move over towards, let's say, the Empress area, and we look at Duchess, 90 megawatts. So you get the idea. You can look at what the capabilities are from an N-0 thermal perspective. We have some additional features on top of this, though, that can help you. So I think of this map in two ways. One is perhaps you know where you want to locate your project and you have a site in mind. And say you could come into the area and say, maybe your site is somewhere around here. And you're saying, well, where should I connect or how much could I connect? And you could look at Vauxhall and say, well, I could connect maybe 97 if I'm close to Hull, but if I locate or if I have a connection to Vauxhall, perhaps I can get a little bit more of have a little larger project size. So that's one way you can look at the map. The other way is perhaps maybe you don't know where you want to connect, but you have a project size in mind. So in that case, we offer some filtering mechanisms. So what you'll see here is if you add in filtering for substation capability greater than or equal to, let's say, 100 megawatts, when you apply, you'll see the effect. We've dropped a number of substations from the system that do not have that 100 megawatt N-0 thermal capability. I'll reset that and do that again so that you can see it. Oops, I forgot to put in a number. And so you can do different levels. Say you want to go to 150, which will drop off more substations. Now you'll see the substations that could, say, accommodate 150 megawatt N-0. Let me reset that and go back to 100. And I'll show you another feature. Say you want to see the voltage levels that could accommodate 100 megawatts. Well, we can say add 138 kV to this filter. When we apply that, you'll notice a couple of the substations are removed that were 240 kV connections that could accommodate 100 megawatts of N-0 from an N-0 thermal perspective. That is the preview of the capability map. And so now bear with me for a second as I switch back. And with that, I'll hand it off to Lei. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Good morning, I'm Lei. And I will guide you how to best use this transmission capability map. Next page, please. In addition to this presentation, we also shared an infographic as your quick reference. It summarizes our assumptions, methods, and key messages for the use of this map. This is the picture from the infographic to highlight the key use of the map. First, the map uses the bubbles, as John just mentioned, to visualize the capability distribution. We can use the size of the bubbles to gauge capabilities among different substations and also the nearby areas. The bigger the bubble, the larger the capability, and vice versa. The map users should not sum up the capability values because each substation is evaluated independently. In this example, if we look at the bubble sizes at these four substations, A, B, C, and D. Substation A has the biggest bubble size. Therefore, substation A is likely to have the highest capability in this area. By the same token, D is likely to have the least capability as it has the smallest bubble size. When we evaluated the capability at the substation A, we do not consider incremental generation at other substations, such as B, C, and D. The power system is an interconnected network. So the performance of transmission elements is correlated with each other. Adding incremental generation at substation A will impact the capability at substations B, C, and D. And these substations are likely share the same or similar transmission constraints. Adding the capability of this substation together will overestimate the capability available in this area. These capabilities are provided to help us to understand the relative size of integration rooms among different substations, given we have the same system conditions. Second, it is recommended to compare the project size with the capability value on the map. Comparing the project size to the capability indicates the level of complexity expected in connection process. The areas with capabilities higher than the projects are the favorable locations to start with. substations with smaller capability than the project or little capability remaining will likely be complex connection requests. In this example, we have substation A and B with higher capability than the project. So these two locations will likely have enough capability for the projects and less likely complex connection requests. Versus if we connect to for CMD, will likely trigger complex connection requests. The project might have a higher chance of congestion, a higher cost of connection solutions, more studies, and so on. Next page, please. So our key messages to leave you with is this capability map is one of the many inputs to be considered in project planning. It provides a current state of indicative remaining capability in the existing system. It's our system baseline. It doesn't consider the future load, generation, transmission development, and operation. As John emphasized earlier, it also considered the congestion constraints. These capability values, they are directional and not guaranteed in the connection process. We have the connection process as our official process to facilitate market participants' requests for either new or altered system access on this system. We use this capability map as a guide to identify potential locations to integrate generation. Compare the project size to the capability, signal the level of capacity expected in the connection process. So the ISO is also thinking about pre-submission support with these maps and helping the customers make more efficient planning decisions in the near future. Next page, please. Next, I would like to talk about the timing of the capability map release. We plan to update the existing system capability on an annual basis. Our first capability map will be released in Q1 2022, and the one after likely Q1 2023. We'll use the hourly merit order, bus level load, and interchanges from the previous year from January to December. We'll use the installed system topology as December 31st, 2021. In those calculations, the capability is determined by congestion constraints, assuming all the system elements are in service or the N-0 conditions. We monitor all the transmission equipments, 69 kV and above. This analysis will help us capture the empirical correlation between load variations, generation characteristics, and output, and establish the capability baseline for the existing transmission system using year 2021 data. For the first map, we report substation capability in the Central East and South Planning regions, where we have most of the project interest. We'll also arrange another stakeholder session after map is published, so we can discuss with you the detailed results, answer any questions you may have, so we can best guide you to use this new product and gather any feedback you may have. The transmission capability map development will be an evolving process. We use these first iterations to establish our methodologies, tools, and the process. As John walks through those details, it is truly a very complex calculation and tons of optimization occurred. So this first iteration is helping us to understand what should we do and how should we do it. The ISO will keep refining the methodologies and adding features of this map to enhance our user experiences. With that, I'll pass Mayor Franz to moderate the Q&A.
Perfect. Okay, we've got a couple of questions in the Q&A box here for you guys. First one coming from Astrid. For the capability assessment, are DERs power flow contribution modeled separately or aggregated with the load at the substation? Also, will the results of the capability assessment be shared with the TFOs?
So the first one, it's shared with everybody. So just to be clear, the map will be public. So it'll be posted so that everybody can see it. So that means it would be shared with the TFOs. I believe, and so I will defer to Leigh and John, but I do believe that the DERs are modeled aggregated. But I believe that's, Leigh, do you want to confirm that?
Yes, as John looks through the assumptions and the study boundaries, we have modeled the transmission element 69 kV and above. So the distribution side is not covered in our analysis, and we're actively working with the DFOs to ensure there's enough alignment and consistency so we can work together to provide viable results to inform the business decision. So they're aggregated depending on where we're at.
Yeah. I'll just add to that, that it's depends on how the metering and the information that we get from the field is on our end. If we have DER specific outputs that is separate from the load, we model it that way. But if we don't have that metering on the DER and it's aggregated with the load in our metering data, then that's how it shows up in the calculations.
Great, thanks for that. Ed asks, are projects that are considered as certain included in the capability assessment?
Thanks for that question. At this time, no, they're not. That's something we can look at potentially for the future. But for now, no, it is incredible. Just to give you a sense, it's quite complex for the calculations to run just as they are now. And so it is something that we might consider for the future, though.
I want to add a few things. One is, as we emphasize a few times, for this first iteration, we are sharing the capability for the existing system, as if a few assumptions we talk about, the historical data from the previous year, the topology from the end of the last year. So it is our baseline. The ISO has a map which shares the project information. As we are starting to roll it out, this product, we'll gather your feedback and see how can we best integrate different maps together to provide the best value to guide the market participants to submit their connection requests.
Okay, thank you, Leigh. Santi asks, is the ISO willing to consider allowing stakeholders access to the demo version as a sandbox to kind of test out and provide feedback on?
I don't think we're quite ready for the sandbox. I think that's, I appreciate the excitement. We're excited as well. I think we would like to wait so that we can do some refinements. It's still a bit of a work in progress for us. So really today is about sharing with you a work in progress and then anticipation of what's to come. And so there's a bit more work to be done yet. But we, as Leigh said in one of her last slides, we're going to have a session again once we do release it, and we'll be looking for some feedback at that time.
Wonderful. Okay, Erica asks, would the ISO consider updating biannually, and if not, why?
I think we can consider it. Again, I think the challenge for us is the amount of change and the amount of work that it takes to create the map in the first place. And so I think it's something that we can look at for a future enhancement. I think it's something that we can look at for the future, but it is a fair bit of a heavy lift to get this out the door in the first place.
Definitely. Okay, Vishnu asks, are there plans to include N-1 constraints in the future?
Leigh, you'll have to remind me. I'm not sure if this was one of our potential future enhancements or not. So again, this is our first crack, and then we've got a number of things that we're looking at for future enhancements.
Yeah. This is our first iteration. It's really the starting point. There are different enhancement features we are considering, including this potential consider the contingencies to expand that to the whole province, potential to provide load values. But as a starting point, we really use this exercise to establish our methodology, tools, and process. What should we do? How should we do it? We would like to have another stakeholder session next year with you once we have the detailed results. And your feedback is going to be very valuable to us. We'll prioritize those future enhancements with you guys through different engagements.
I just want to add on to Leigh and Marie-Frances. I don't know how to communicate this so that it's understood, but this is very complex work that we're doing with hundreds of thousands of iterations of models and calculations. And so this is not a simple, let's just add N minus one to it. And that's a quick upgrade. Or let's do it biannually and that's a quick upgrade. We're gonna start with the annual current state system, see how well and how effective of a tool that is. We obviously will look for everybody's feedback for improvements, but I do want to put some context on how complicated this is, and so that the expectations are managed out there, that it's not going to be a simple improvement opportunity, because we're going to focus in on getting this baseline working well first. And John and the team have been really working hard to try to figure out how to actually get to this date. And then in 2022, we'll see what other incrementals we can do. But hopefully the audience appreciates the complexity of what we're doing here, and understand the challenge of driving improvements. We'll start with the base first.
Thanks, Dennis.
Another question here from Astrid. If a potential GFO plans on connecting directly to a line via TTAP instead of a substation, how would they be able to use the map?
Yep, good question. So again, this is one of those things in the future. Right now, we're focusing on the substation capability. So you might be able to generally get a sense, I think, of the substations in the area and what the flows might be. That might be a bit indicative of the area. You still have to go through the process, I guess, to truly find out if there is capability. If you do want to do a TTAP, it's a bit more complex. So as Dennis was saying, those line flows and those calculations are more complex, and it's something we're looking at in the future as another enhancement, because we appreciate a lot of folks are wanting to TTAP off lines.
Thank you for that one. Leonard asks, how difficult would it be to get a mirror version of this map with capability for increased load to inform potential large load customers and energy storage facilities?
A mirror version of this map. I'm not sure I fully understand the question.
A load capability map.
Oh, okay. Well, I will defer to you guys. You guys knew how challenging this one was. I would assume it might be equally challenging, but I'll turn it over to those folks that really understand the technical pieces behind this.
Yeah, we appreciate this feedback. That's why we mentioned that, because we understand the value to provide some transparent and useful information to the market participants. That is why, even though we want to cover this much, and we prioritize it, and we choose to say, let's focus on the generation capabilities where we see most of challenges to start with. So sort it out how to do this, and then we'll engage the market participants, understand the value, understand how to best serve the user needs. So this is the starting point, and absolutely we'll consider those requests in the future.
Great, thanks, Leigh. No more questions in the Q&A from anyone. If there's anyone that wants to raise a hand and ask a quick question, now is your chance.
Yeah, but while that's happening, maybe Lei and John, you can just give them a bit of an idea how incrementally challenging doing a load capability map would be as it relates to generation, just to give the audience a feel for, is that something that's likely doable for 2022 or not?
It would just have to think through the, I think it's possible. I don't know if we could commit to 2022. A lot of the methodology can be, I think, reused, but then modified. Do we have to modify the optimizations to go the opposite direction? And so there is some work as far as building out the opposite calculation, but it would basically build on what we've done to this point. I think it's possible. The concern is the fact we're using a DC analysis and load has a higher likelihood of providing a voltage limitation. And so we'd be missing that component.
Okay, that's helpful. That should be helpful for the audience to understand that it's not a simple flip the switch and you've got load. But that's definitely one, as Lei indicated, that's on our list to see if we can enable as well from an improvement perspective. But yeah, we were pretty deliberate in prioritizing focusing on the generation integration capability, given that we're seeing a lot of interest in generation connections in those two regions specifically. So we prioritize those two regions and we prioritize generation integration capability. So, okay, well, hopefully, yeah, you're welcome, Leonard. Hopefully that quick overview of the transmission capability mapping down at the substation level was helpful to all of you here. We are interested in feedback. You can use our Jennifer. What's the stakeholder?
Stakeholder relations at ISO.ca.
Yeah, stakeholder relations at ISO.ca. If you have any feedback, either on the utilization piece that we talked about or the capability mapping, and stay tuned. In Q1, we'll be coming back out focused on the capability map and the results that we've locked down based on the year end results. And we'll go through that, share that with you, and look for your feedback on continuous improvement on this tool and this path forward. So thanks very much. If there's no last minute questions, John, Lei, thanks, Marie-France, Jennifer, have a great week. And if we don't see you before the new year, have a great holiday season, because I'm hoping we're just about done with industry engagements for the year, but we'll see. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.